The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 429. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Well, I have two guests joining me on this episode, and they both are independent local filmmakers who have some wild films that they've released over the last several years. I'm talking about Mr. Mark Murtha and Mr. Thomas Angeletti. Thomas is making his second appearance on the PVD Cast, while Mark is making his debut. But both of these gentlemen have worked a lot together on various different projects, such as Friends Forever and the 78 Slasher, which was this amazing double feature horror movie that these two gentlemen created. But they're here to talk about a new project called Body of Walter. And I'm going to let Mark and I'm going to let Thomas explain the plot to you, because I don't think I can do it justice. And we talk about that. We talk about some of the past films. We talk about Mark's podcast, Creep It 100. It's going to be a fun one because, you know, I love movies and I love talking about movies. So I'm not going to waste any more time, so I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Mark Murtha and Thomas Angeletti. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down this evening with two individuals from the Columbus, Ohio filmmaking, independent filmmaking community, I should say, Mr. Mark Murtha and Thomas Angeletti. Mark, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you for having us on today.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And Thomas, you're making a return to the PVD Cast. And how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's Friday. The sun is shining. The Hell is Real Derby is tomorrow. It's going to be a good weekend. It's going to be a great weekend.
How many soccer games have you taken in?
I go to almost every game. And okay. I travel. So yeah, I went to Charlotte this year in Nashville. I think I've only missed one game so far.
Okay.
Because I was okay. In Texas, so I couldn't make it.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about a bunch of different projects that you gentlemen are involved with, but let's start off with, which I believe is the newest one, called Body of Walter. So Thomas, can you tell us a little bit about this project?
Sure can. Body of Walter is a 1980s sci-fi body horror film. Super grindhouse style. It is our most ambitious project we've ever done. And we took everything from Friends Forever and we said, let's double that. I don't know why we think this way, but we said, we're going to do it even bigger, even better, even crazier. And we started thinking of all the ways we could do that. And thus Body of Walter was formed.
I gotta ask, you say most ambitious. What does that mean to you? Can you give us a little bit of what to expect, maybe, is another way of phrasing it for this project?
So far, and we might even be adding two more, we have a team of six special effects artists from three different haunted attractions in Ohio. And so far, we've had almost 87 submissions for the four main casts. By the time this is done with extras, which I'm going to invite you, John, at the end of this, that was kind of my surprise, but by the time we get done with all the extras and everything, we're going to be at a cast of about 40-some people.
Wow.
And double that with crew, we'll be close to 80 to 100 people on this set.
Wow, that is a very, very long list of folks to have on there, man. Excellent.
Yeah, it's insane.
Excellent. Now, Mark, what's your role in Body of Walter, if I may ask?
I don't necessarily have a role yet. I did audition for the lead of Tommy. But besides that, I have kind of been coming in giving input with Tom and his team on the side just to help them really make this script something phenomenal. And I have read the recent script and you guys are in for a treat. I'll tell you what, this film is going to be off the walls insane.
Mark is literally the producer on everything I touch. Nothing gets done in Awesome Films without Mark's like blessing or eyesight or insight or however you want to call it. And Mark eventually wanted to take a more, I'll just say, monstrous role in the film. And as he got to read the script and got to kind of dive into the world of Body of Walter, he wanted to try out for one of the main roles. And his self-tape was impressive as always. I can't wait to see how all that goes down. But regardless of what happens, Mark is always going to be involved in everything that I do until he gets too famous and goes to Hollywood or wherever the hell he ends up and can't work with me anymore.
You know, if that happens, I'm taking you to Hollywood, Tom, right? Like,
you can just pack me in the trunk or be like the old original Vacation with the on the roof. Was it the aunt or the grandma?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can be my carry-on bag.
Sure. I'll try to fit.
So you said the casting is going very, very well, but let's talk about what's the timetable for getting everything, all the ducks in a row, as the saying goes.
So we've been in pre-prod since February. So it's been quite a while. We look to shoot mid-July into early August, probably July. We're thinking 5 to 6 days of shooting. The film time, run time is going to be about 75 minutes. So it's a featurette, not quite a feature, not quite a short, kind of in there in the middle. Fun fact, if you want to stream on something, say Tubi or Amazon Prime, it has to be over 50 minutes to be considered to be there. Otherwise, you're on the much smaller platforms that do shorts. But a lot of the larger platforms are not accepting shorts at this time, obviously, because they can't put enough ads inside of the film. They don't make enough money. Mm-hmm. So they say other reasons, but let's just be honest, it's about money. So with a 75 minute, we could pretty much fit anywhere we want, except for probably Netflix, but who knows? We're using a Netflix approved camera this time, and we're probably an agent and some money away from getting onto a platform like that. So we'll see.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your other films that you guys have worked on here. And we'll come back at the end again to just recap Body of Walter. But you guys put together a double feature in January of your two short films, Friends Forever and The 78 Slasher. The premiere was at Lenox Town Theater. You guys want to talk maybe about how that all came together, the idea of doing a premiere? Because I don't know of too many other independent filmmakers that have done something like that. There's probably has been. I'm just not aware of it. So how did it all come together?
Actually, it was my idea. I think it came to me on the set of Friends Forever, if I remember correctly, right, Tom? Like,
yeah,
that's when I brought it up to you originally, because we were slated to shoot Friends Forever the weekend before we were shooting The 78 Slasher. And I was like, since these were shot back to back, like, how cool would it be to premiere these together in this big, extravagant, like, red carpet kind of thing? And Tom was like, yeah, sure, if we can make it happen. And then, you know, a few emails later, it came to fruition. It was so surreal that, well, number one, we had to upgrade the theater, what, three times, Tom? Because people kept buying tickets. I don't know. Just the overwhelming amount of support for our two films just in the Columbus community was eye-opening. It was surreal. It was inspiring. And that's what kind of pushed us to do Body of Walter and then the other film, Die Toten Insel. That's how these double features kind of came to be. It was just a stupid idea I had on the set of Friends Forever.
Well, if we're even being honest, it was a kind of a, yeah, we could probably do it, you know, on Friends Forever. And then New Year's rolls around and Mark's like, hey, you remember that double feature? We should just probably do it. And I'm like, yeah, sure. What are you thinking? Like March or February? He's like, no, let's just do it in like 2 weeks. I'm like, 2 weeks? Like, we're going to sell all these tickets in 2 weeks? He's like, yeah, dude, it'll be fine. So, you know, of course you have to put the money down like ahead of time to get the, you know, to basically take the adaptation of the MP4 and put it into projection style and stuff like that. So, and I'm like, oh man, we're gonna Like, let's 50 tickets. Let's go with 50 tickets, right? So in 48 hours, we sold over 100. So like, well, we have to upgrade the theater. And then it went to 200. And then we went to the 300-person theater. And I'm like, well, what are we going to do if we sell out this theater? And they just shook their head. So it ended up being, what, 250-some people?
Yeah. It was, I mean, just seeing that many people come out to watch our short films, I mean, it's still very overwhelming in the best possible way. Like, it's a feeling and a night I will never forget for the rest of my life.
Yeah, we outsold Mean Girls, like the adaptation, on that Saturday. They told us that. And ticket sales. Excellent. And that was like either their opening weekend or like the second weekend of their opening. We outsold them. Which is like whatever, but I just thought that was funny.
It's not whatever. You can boast a little bit.
I mean, I was happy if 10 people showed up, because originally it was supposed to be like, we want to do something for our cast and crew, right? Just to show our appreciation. So like, it started out, let's just do it at somebody's house. And then I have a movie theater in my apartment, and we're like, oh, let's just keep getting bigger and bigger. And then it's like, now we got to sell tickets to, you know, get some people in the door to pay for, because we didn't charge anyone who worked on the films, right? So then we had to offset that cost. And then obviously that money went into other films, because obviously filmmakers don't make any money. Not our style, because we're always investing back into our business, into our people, into our films. So it was an awesome experience. I loved every minute of it.
Well, let's talk about the short films real quick. Thomas, let's talk about yours, Friends Forever. Can you give a quick little synopsis of the film?
Yeah, so basically this old farmhouse in the 50s, this family went about their lives until their corn, I can't even remember the term of it, but it went bad. There's a special term for this corn that we had to specially get that was all like covered in bugs, and I don't even, it was disgusting. But anyway, so basically the mother, instead of starving, kind of did her family the service of killing them all so they didn't starve, and kind of then killed herself. And then comes in the 80s, these four college kids come in and they want to throw a party in this house, and bad things happen, as all 80s horror movies do.
Where did you find the farmhouse in the land that you used for the setting?
So funny enough, it wasn't even our original location. We had another location. We had a house that was from the 1700s.
Oh,
and it was the coolest house I've ever seen, because I've never been in a house like that. And they were all about us making a movie until we said a horror movie, and they're like, forget it. This is crazy. We'd never let you shoot that film in here. So, and this was literally what, Mark, 3 weeks, two or 3 weeks before we was actually set to film. Because we've had multiple conversations with these people, phone calls, emails, everything was ready to go. And then they said, no way, man, a horror movie? You can't do that in here. So then one of the writers, Jared, actually knew somebody that knew somebody that was friends with somebody else that loved horror films. They actually used that house for family horror weekends in a haunted house during Halloween. And she was all over the moon about us shooting a horror film in there. She actually hid a bunch of dolls and little monsters and figurines to scare the shit out of us the entire time we were in the house.
And that was a local location, correct?
It is in Marion, or Green Camp. So right outside of Marion, probably like 45 minutes north of Columbus.
Okay. So we'll say Central Ohio. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the 78 slasher, Mark. It was kind of, as I recall you telling me, it was kind of like your ode to Halloween.
Yes, it was my love letter to John Carpenter, if you will. The original Halloween is the movie that kind of inspired me to follow a path into filmmaking, whether that be acting, directing, writing, just the whole shebang, if you will. That's the movie that did it for me. So I kind of wanted to, and this was the first time I've ever like actually directed a film and had a crew with like a professional crew and all this. So I was very excited to get started on this. I've always been a fan of Michael Myers, and I kind of always wanted to do my own like spin on it. So this one takes place right after the events of the first one. So it retcons everything after it, and it's kind of its own timeline, if you will. So Michael Myers gets up after being shot by Dr. Loomis 6 times and just continues his night of terror. And that was kind of where it all started right there, was with that synopsis.
How has the reaction been to that? I know there's lots of fans of that franchise of Halloween. How have they responded to your film?
Oh, they love it. Okay. It's an overwhelming amount of support, and they want a sequel and stuff. I just don't know if that's plausible at this moment for reasons I'm not sure I can talk about on a podcast. But I would love to do a sequel if given the opportunity, but I'll just have to wait until things kind of simmer a little bit. Just to give you a little bit of backstory here, a few other Halloween filmmakers kind of got under fire by Trankus Studios for using Michael Myers and, you know, the copyrighted music. So, yeah. So we've been in talks with the studio themselves just to see what we can do and what we can't do. So once we get a little bit more clarity on that, that's when I'll decide if we are pushing the sequel into production or not. So,
okay. Well, listeners at home have probably tuned in and they're like, wow, we're hearing all about horror films. We're hearing all about horror films, which they should have read the synopsis before listening. But nonetheless, I digress. Why horror for you two? Why is it your favorite genre?
Horror for me is not an escape from reality, but a confrontation to fear. You're confronting your biggest fears in the most comfortable environment, whether you're in a theater or in the comfort of your own home. I find it to be somewhat therapeutic to watch horror films.
Thomas, you have been quoted as saying that horror is diverse and that's why you like it so much. Is that correct?
Yeah, I love horror because of everything that Mark said, you know, the journey, the fear, making your own world and scaring the shit out of people inside of it. But horror is the one genre you can put comedy in, you could put love in, you could put action in, you could literally put any type of genre inside of a horror film and it's still good. Like horror comedies are like some of the best movies you'll ever watch because they're probably really terrible story plots, but you laugh the entire time. Love stories, like Interview with the Vampire, you go clear back to like original Dracula. You could name so many films that do different subgenres inside of horror that you can't really do in other genres. So that's what I guess what I was talking about when I said diverse. And of course, I love killing people in films, but it's expensive. So I don't love that part. I guess that's the escape for reality. Like, oh shoot, you want to blow up a body? Like, let's do it. You can't do that in a love story. I mean, you can, but like, you know, it just really doesn't go that well.
I'm thinking that needs to be the title of this episode. I love killing people in film.
But it's just like, especially people that's never been in that situation, like actors, they love it. Everybody wants to. People will DM us and be like, can I die in one of your films? Like, I just want to die. I don't even want to do anything. Just like, kill me. And that's really how, like, Friends Forever, when we poisoned all those people, half of them were like, dude, I really don't know shit about filmmaking. I just want to die in one of your films. I'm like, great, drink this crazy stuff and fall on the ground for me. And I just like, and they just love it. And it makes it like you just become this little family because like everybody's just having a great time.
None of the extras are like, wait, what's my motivation again? Oh, wait. All right, well, let's talk about another one of your films, Thomas, Perdition, which was your first feature length film. You were stated, you stated that it helped make you a filmmaker. Why do you feel that way?
Because it was awful. And every lesson that I've learned now, I've learned making that film because literally it was a short that didn't go really well. And then I'm like, well, it didn't go really well, but let's just make a feature out of this, which I should never have done, right? If the short didn't go so well, why would I lengthen it by 30 some minutes and make it a whole film? And just like things you learn about cameras and about actually directing people and about things that you have to do to be able to learn. Like you can watch YouTube videos, you can watch Quentin Tarantino or, you know, John Carpenter talk about all this stuff. But until you're in the shit with the people, you know nothing. Because it's all fun and games until everybody's looking at you and a camera's not working and a tripod just fell over and the light's flickering and somebody's screaming about something else. And then, you know, it's very overwhelming. And that film took a hell of a lot longer to make than it should have. But I look back at that, I'm like, everything I am today was because of that film. And I was like, when everybody's like, let's put it on Amazon. Let's do this. I'm like, I don't want anyone to see this film ever in the history of the world. I sometimes like Google like 10 worst horror films on Tubi because I'm just hoping to see my film on it one day. But it's just, you know, I learned everything that I do now from making that film. So I appreciate it that much more.
Have you ever had somebody as a mentor come on the set with you or no?
Yeah, there's people that I look up to, a lot of actors and other, you know, cinematographers and stuff that have been doing it a lot longer than I have, especially local. Obviously, I haven't had anyone from a much bigger playing field in our films, but, you know, just people that has acted in a lot more stuff or directed a lot more stuff. I lean on Mark a lot because he has a lot of experience in a lot of areas that I don't. Just like Mark says, grab your camera, we're going to film this stuff, and that's what I do for him. But, yeah. Just everything is a learning experience. And if you're not growing, you're just staying stagnant. You're never going to improve on your skills. So it's always nice to have, it's always nice to be the least experienced person in the room. And I try to surround myself with people to do that.
And look, I think you said it best. You learn from your mistakes. And obviously with Perdition, you learn from all those mistakes you made.
And I'm still making mistakes and I'm still learning.
Well, and that's a great attitude to have. Absolutely. Same with podcasting. I've been doing it a long time, but I still learn every day. You know, I learned something on my last episode that I didn't think I would ever forget to do, but I did. But that's another story for another time. Mark, let's talk a little bit about your acting. Now, if I remember correctly from some of my research, I just had a recent run at Shadowbox. Is that correct?
Yes, I had actually worked at Shadowbox Live from 2018 to 2020 before the pandemic hit. So when the pandemic hit, I was obviously out of a job for a while. And that's when I took my leap into TV and film there because I had nothing else going on. And I saw Stranger Things was casting and I applied, ended up getting the position, working on that for a year. And that's where I fell in love with the craft of filmmaking and not just films themselves.
Can you describe for the listeners what do you mean by that, by the craft of filmmaking?
There's just so much that goes into it. Just to give you a little bit of insight here, I got to sit down with the Duffer brothers on the set of Stranger Things and just watch them direct this scene. I watched them telling the DP what to do, the gaffers and all that stuff, just seeing how much effort it actually took to just make a shot look right. And just seeing how much passion that these guys have for their craft, that's what really brought me in. Like, oh, I want to do this. This is something I want to do for the rest of my life.
And you also have quite a resume. You were on The Walking Dead as well. Can you talk about that experience?
I would be happy to. That was by far the best set experience I had on a professional, like a big studio set. So I was there for about 2 months doing costume fittings and COVID tests on and off, and they kept pushing the shoot date further and further out. So I ended up being stuck in Georgia for 3 months. Luckily, I have good friends that came down there and hung out with me, and we just made a ball of it. But when The Walking Dead finally got me the official dates, I saw I was shooting from 5 p.m. to 7 a.m. for 3 nights in a row in this very bougie, neighborhood with these mansions. And I'm like, yo, how is that? How is this The Walking Dead, dude? Like, but no, it was awesome. I played a Commonwealth trooper in The Walking Dead. So I was in this crazy armor. And this was during the winter, by the way. And these suits were built for the Georgia heat. So we were all of us soldiers were freezing our asses off. But I would do it again in a heartbeat. Like not everyone can say they fought zombies alongside Daryl Dixon, and I got to, and that was one of the most surreal experiences I've ever had, because The Walking Dead was one of the shows that raised me. It's one of the shows that also inspired me. So just being there, I wish I could put it into words, but I just can't. I can't.
Well, man, that sounds awesome. That what a blast that would have been to just be able to be down there. And because it was towards the end of the run of the series, correct?
Correct. Yes, I got to work on the very last episode of The Walking Dead.
Oh, the very last.
The very last.
Okay, cool. That's pretty righteous, man.
Dude, I know. I can't believe I even had that opportunity. It's one of the hardest shows to get on in Georgia. So when I got that email, dude, I was jumping up and down. I fucking called my mom. I was like, dude, you're not going to believe this. it was surreal, man.
Well, Mark, let's talk about your podcast.
Yeah.
Creepit 100?
Yes, Creepit 100 podcast. We talk about all things horror. We talk about horror movies. We talk about true crime events, myths, goblins, ghouls. We even shot a docuseries on the Mansfield Reformatory. Oh. That has yet to air, but that was super fun. It's great. I have an amazing co-host who's my best friend. Shout out Kinson Chion. And my producer, Chorsey L. Calbert the IV, is phenomenal. He's actually a producer on the 78 Slasher as well. In fact, I've kind of got him and Thomas in talks now. So we'll see. We'll see how that transpires.
So, how many episodes do you have?
I think we have over 100 out.
Okay.
Now we're gearing up for our third season. There's no official release date yet because we're trying to craft the podcast more into a show style. So we want to incorporate sketch comedy, live music, and just a bunch of other things to really spruce it up.
Okay. Yeah, that definitely, if you said to me it's a horror podcast, a true crime podcast, I wouldn't have thought of live bands. I'm just going to be honest. So you're onto something, Mark.
Well, the first live thing we did, we kind of experimented in the beginning of season two. We did a whole episode as a tribute to the band Ghost, if you're familiar with Ghost. Oh.
I'm familiar with. I know a little bit about them. That's about it.
And that did really well. So that's kind of why we're exploring that option now.
Okay. Thomas, how'd you get into filmmaking?
Honestly, yeah. Always loved films, but getting into the actual filmmaking, I used to, a long time ago, had a YouTube channel where we cooked barbecue, and it was called Hill Grillies. And we... a friend of mine at the time did all the cameras, and we literally just sit there and drink beer and cook barbecue. And he got to a point where he was doing like talking head stuff, and he was doing, you know, interviews and, you know, event stuff. And he's like, man, you should probably just help me. Cause I literally went out and bought a camera, not even like $1,500 for this Sony 6500. Didn't even know how to turn a damn thing on. It was just for Hill Grillies. He's like, well, you should probably just use that thing. And I'm like, well, here's two cameras. He's like, no, you use it. So this was 2018, 2019. And I just followed him around and filmed some stuff. And then, you know, obviously I've always loved films. I always loved movies. So I'm like, well, I might try my hand at just running a camera on a film. And we did some really terrible shorts that are probably somewhere buried on the YouTube. And then kind of just the rest is history.
Man. Please don't take this the wrong way, Thomas, but I find that to be a shocking story, because in all of your reels and everything, you seem like you're the man when it comes to knowing what equipment to use and when. And so I'm not by no means take that as an insult, like I'm insulting your intelligence. I'm actually complimenting you because, man, you just seem like the man that knows it all.
I'll take that compliment, but that is not true. It's really just trial and error and getting the right people to go to war with you on set. Okay. And testing stuff. We test all the time. We do all these things, little, we call them test scenes, where we bring actors in we've never met before. We set them up with a scene. I get new crew in and we literally just shoot a scene, and we learn a lot from that. We test out new equipment, new people. I learn everything. Obviously, we're always reading. We're always watching YouTube. We're always learning from people who are better than us. So it's the whole hard work beats talent. I would say just put the work in and you could probably almost do anything you want to do in your life. And if you got the real passion, if you got your heart into it, and like I said, you surround yourself with the right people that want to kick ass with you, you could do anything. You could take over the world. So that's pretty much how I got here. I was a musician before all that. I play guitar. I just loved movies. I didn't know what to do with a camera.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit, Thomas, about some of your shorts have been nominated for various different awards. How does that make you feel as a filmmaker that has, as you said, you know, you trial and error a lot. So that's got to feel good when you get the notice that, hey, you know, whether it's Complicated or After or any of those short films that get nominated for something, it's got to feel good, right?
It feels great. It feels great when other people, I love watching my crew win, watching the actors I work with. I think I get more out of that than me winning. And I know a lot of people say that, but there's something when you're a director and you put people in position to win and they just fucking win. Oh, sorry, I didn't, shouldn't have probably said that.
That's all right.
They just grow, and you get to see people that, you know, start out doing something and they're just okay with it, and then they just rock it. You know, like Alex and Bob, like a couple of our crewmates, like we had no sound guy and they learned how to do sound in a week. And then after won an award with two guys that did sound for 2 weeks and they just did it on that film and they crushed it. And I just love it. I love it. And they're like, Alex, you know, it's just like, I can't believe we even won anything. The sound was probably awful. And I'm like, no, it was great. And you did that. And, but so it, in the end, like it feels great, but I love watching a team win. I love watching Mark win, or, you know, when other actors and actresses and stuff just and crew, I love it, man. I love watching people smile. I love when people come up and say, man, that movie was awesome, or made me laugh, or scared the shit out of me, or that was disgusting. Like I live for that stuff. I live for it. That means more to me than no awards at the end of the day. Cause that means I made you do something. I made you feel something. That's what it's all about.
It's a two-way street, man. I feel the same way about your wins, so.
I appreciate that. That's why we always win. You win together.
Exactly.
Well, you know what? I just realized on my notes here, there was a question mark that I was going to ask you a couple of minutes ago. You also got the opportunity to be killed by Michael Myers. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
I absolutely can. And I'm just going to start off by saying this will be and always be the best day of my life. So sorry to my wife, the day we get married, it's the second best day. So
she probably knows.
She knows. So yeah, when Halloween Kills was, you know, promoting the film, they had this promotion going on. It was called the Face the Shape contest. And all you had to do was submit this video as to why you're Halloween's biggest fan and all this stuff. And I submitted my video, you know, just maybe, you know, thinking, what's the worst? What's the worst that can happen? And then like 2 weeks later, I get an email from Universal Studios and they're like, hey, you won. We want to fly you out next week. I want you to shoot this promo with us. They send me the script. I read it and I'm like, hell yes, I am in. So they flew me out. And the first night I was there, I got to see Halloween Kills like a week early before it premiered.
Oh, cool.
And I loved it. I loved Halloween Kills. I know it's not everyone's favorite, but I loved it. I thought it was the best version of Michael Myers we had. And that's all I'll say about that. And then the next day, they, you know, they get the chauffeur to come pick us up from the hotel. They take us to the Universal backlot. And actually, the scenes we shot inside of the house was the same house from Rob Zombie's House of 1,000 Corpses. So getting to see that in real life was super fucking badass. I mean, also like getting killed by Michael Myers was super sweet, but I met some of like the coolest people on that set. The director, Steven Reddy, he's amazing. My stunt double, Dennis, he was such a kind, just genuine guy. And I got to work with two amazing special effects artists that have worked under Christopher Nelson, who did the makeup for the Halloween films. So we finished shooting all the interior shots and we're waiting for the sun to go down so we can shoot the exterior shots. And me and my girlfriend are walking the streets of the back lot and we see all these actors from Halloween Kills doing press, and Jamie Lee Curtis and Judy Greer are there. And then my Universal contact comes up to me. He's like, hey, you want to meet her? And I was like, hell yeah, I want to meet Jamie Lee Curtis. So after she wrapped her interview, I got to hang out with Jamie Lee Curtis and Judy Greer for a few minutes. And I can tell you that Jamie Lee Curtis is actually one of the sweetest celebrities I've ever met in my life.
That's great to hear, because oftentimes you hear the other way around and it's like, it's deflating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I've met a lot of big names in Hollywood, but she's by far my favorite I've met.
Well, I'll throw a curveball at you two guys. Can you give me your top three horror films?
Ooh, man.
Yeah, I can.
Okay, Mark, go ahead. You go first.
I'm a big fan of 70s horror, so all these are going to be in the 70s. I hope y'all are cool with that. But Halloween's my number one, obviously. Jaws is number two. And then The Exorcist is number three for me.
Jaws is number one for me.
You like Jaws?
I do. I do.
Hell yeah.
The original one was fantastic. The sequels are garbage, but that's neither here nor there. So that was mine. Thomas, how about you?
I have no idea. That's go all day. I do love 70s and 80s horror, Cronenberg, obviously Carpenter. I don't know if I can nail like My favorite ones, though, that might be tough. Definitely Evil Dead, the first one, was great. That would be up there. I'd say Cronenberg, like anything he ever did, was like great. Halloween would be up there. Newer films, a little bit tougher for me. I don't know if I could name you a lot of newer films that I've liked, especially a lot of the reboots. I really did like Insidious for what it was. I would put that up there as like a newer, I guess newer, it's not that new, but like, I guess the newer age horror films. The first horror film I ever saw in my life was Night of the Living Dead. So I guess I'd have to put that on there. So my brother let me watch that when I was way too young to be watching stuff. But it's like, but it's like the 1968 one. It wasn't like the 1990 Collar, like the remake of it. But, you know, it was just weird to see that stuff at that young of age. But I don't know. I guess that would be some of them, but man, it would take all day to really go down through and nail them all.
Okay. That's why I said I'm throwing you a curveball. I kind of figured that I'm impressed. Tip of the hat, Mark. You were on it. I thought both of you would be like, oh man, I don't know. There's this one and maybe that one. Okay. All right.
You got good one deal. For two. That's a decent batting average.
That's not bad. It's not bad at all. No. So speaking of genres, would you ever decide to do a different genre of films?
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What genre would you want to tackle if you could not tackle horror, if you couldn't be involved in a horror project?
My Sicilian Irish ass needs to make a mob movie before I die. It just has to happen. Whenever that time comes.
Okay.
Because a lot of friends always say like you got to do it, but and I love obviously Goodfellas is one of my favorite films of all time, but Bronx Tale is probably like one of my favorite films of all time.
That is an underrated film.
Great.
I don't think that film gets the respect it deserves.
It never did. Oh,
but it's fantastic in capital letters.
Yep.
Absolutely.
But obviously, that's not what everybody thinks of a mob film. They think of Casino, Goodfellas, Godfather, something of that nature. But it was just an amazing film. It was probably, like I said, one of my favorites. So yeah, for me, probably a mob film has to come. Some crime, something like that.
Mark, how about you? What genre would you love to tackle if you couldn't do a horror film?
See, something that I would really, really enjoy. Now I have two on my mind here. I would really like to tackle a Western at some point in time. I think that'd be really fun. I love the aspect of a showdown between good and bad. I think that'd be really fun to explore. But one that like is really jumping out at me is like the idea of doing a heist film, kind of like Baby Driver or The Town, something like that. Like that would be so fun.
I think that would be a challenge though to put together.
Oh, 1,000%. But yeah. I love a challenge.
All right, gentlemen, we'll start wrapping up here with a few final questions real quick. I guess the biggest question, since you two are, you know, stalwarts of the independent film scene here in Columbus, Ohio, what's the best part of being part of that community?
Building these friendships, because like all of us have grown so close as people that I consider them family. Like Tom is my brother, man. I love him to death. Like we've been in the trenches together. Like that, my biggest thing is just the camaraderie, I guess.
Okay. Thomas?
I would second that. Definitely the support. I mean, I see independent filmmaking being the new Hollywood, especially, you know, the strike happening and all they're doing is, you know, the precursor to that was really crappy reboots and shitty sequels. And after the fact, it's the same thing, right? We need new blood, new talent, new ideas, new energy. And I think that's what we're bringing here. And especially as big as Columbus is growing. I mean, I remember when you and I had our first podcast, we were talking about Columbus growing and like how it is, but like, just look at it now compared to that time. It is huge what's going on here. And, you know, obviously like cities like Atlanta is blown up in film and Chicago has gotten bigger and we're right there. We're right behind them. And not even Columbus, but Ohio is a whole, just to support the people. Like just Wednesday, we had a test scene. We had people coming from Dayton, from Lima, just to be with us for like 2 or 3 hours out of their day. And they're set. We had one person who was going to come from Louisville, but the storms that we had last week or this week kind of messed that up for them. But just people just want to be a part of it. And we want you to be a part of it. Anybody listening here, just anything you want to do, just do it. If you want to be in a film or help out with a film, you could help put up a light. You could do anything. Just come to war with us. Come mess up. I ain't gonna say what I usually say because I'm cussing, but you know, just come make films with us. Come explore art. It's the greatest thing on earth. It's what drives us. And I really, that's what's going to happen. It's going to keep getting bigger, and I'm blessed to be a part of it.
Yeah, you know, I think that just this is kind of what you were talking about, Tom, but kind of a little bit off track as well. Is I marvel at how quickly things happen here in Columbus. Like, you know, I don't go down to the Short North for like 3 weeks. A little bit longer, like 3 months. I don't go down to the Short North for like 3 months, and I go down, I'm like, holy shit, where did this building come from? It's like they just like explode and up from the ground is a high rise or whatever. It's like it's crazy to think how quickly things go up. But on the other hand, I oftentimes see as I go around town, there's a lot of empty buildings. I'm like, couldn't you retrofit those and make those something in, you know, make them into something? You know what I mean?
One thing that I would say that listeners to your podcast, if they have any influence, like let's repurpose these old buildings and not tear them down just to build the same thing in a newer format. Let's keep the history of these buildings alive. Like I hate that they tear down these historical buildings and just put up, like you said, like a sky rise. Just repurpose the building. Keep some, like there should be some kind of clause, like a historical clause. I know they do it if there's like a historical landmark, but I wish Columbus would take the initiative to just keep some of that alive, some of the architecture, some of just what made Columbus what it is, instead of just tearing it down. But that's neither here nor there. But
all right. Well, gentlemen, is there any other projects that we did not discuss that you want to have a few minutes to just tell the folks about?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a film in the works that we are shooting, I think, right after Body of Walter. It's also a pretty ambitious film. It's a unique horror. It's a very unique horror film. I'd kind of compare it. I'd call it an adventure thriller, I guess. You've read the script, Tom. What would you call it?
I think that's exactly where you want to go.
So we were kind of inspired by Indiana Jones meets like the video game Outlast, if you're familiar. It's about this asylum that has been condemned, and there are just mutants running around it, right? So like what would happen if like there's an Indiana Jones-esque character that runs into these mutants, right? But there's more to it. I'll give you the synopsis. A journalist, Eli Towns, and his cousin, Cecil Towns, have dedicated their whole lives trying to transcribe a mysterious letter left behind from their ancestors. This letter is soon discovered to have ties with Nazi Germany and the downfall of the Third Reich. The journalist finds himself and his cousin on what seemed to be an abandoned Nazi research facility. They soon realize the facility is not abandoned, but is occupied by mutant Nazi experiments gone wrong.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's all I'll tell you.
All right, Tom, do you have anything in the pipeline besides Body of Walter?
Not really. There's some shorts here and there, some test scenes, but nothing. Like everything's prepped for Body of Walter and Mark's film.
Gotcha.
Because like you said, we're going to shoot them back to back. Hell, we might be shooting them at the same time. Who knows? Depending on how things work out.
All right, gentlemen, it's time to plug website, social media, all that stuff where folks can contact you. So have at it, gents.
Tom, after you.
So everything you want to find from Alysm Films, you could just look us up. It's Alysm Films. We're on Instagram, Facebook, we're our website, YouTube, myself. It's just Thomas_Angeletti_ on everything under the sun.
There it is. Okay. And you can find me on my personal Instagram, which is just Mark Murtha. If you want to watch some of my films, they're going to be under the channel on YouTube, Slappy Productions, SLAPPY Productions. You can check out my podcast on keepit100prod.com. It is called Creep It 100.
All right, there you go. Gentlemen, it's been fun sitting down talking independent cinema with you guys. It's been a blast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. So much.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we'll have to talk in the future when some of these newer projects start hitting the screens.
You're going to have to come to the next premiere.
Well, yeah, I'll be there. I enjoyed the first premiere. I'll definitely be there. So
real quick, like, just to wrap up, like, what did you think of that experience, being somebody who was sitting in the stands watching the thing?
First thing.
We'll throw you a curveball.
Okay, we'll throw me a curveball. I felt like for a few moments, I felt awkward because I'm like, oh, shit, you're supposed to dress up for this thing. Damn it. I'm like in jeans and a hoodie and baseball cap. And I was like, oh, shit. And then, like, I'm with my girlfriend. I'm like, shit, I think we were supposed to dress up. And she's like, I don't see why you need to dress up. I'm like, no, I feel weird now. So that's the first thing I could think of, was I felt really underdressed. But the experience I thought was awesome. I had a friend and his son, they bought tickets and came along too, because they're big horror fans. And they enjoyed themselves. I thought the experience was really cool. I really did. once I got over the fact that I was a little underdressed. Anyways, I don't know why that slipped my mind. I don't know why, like, that I could have thrown on a polo and some khakis, you know, and looked a little more presentable, but I, you know, no, I'm just going to be all white trashy and throw on a hoodie and
you were not white trash.
So, but no, it was an awesome experience. You know, definitely. I think that if anybody's out there that you see a premiere, whether it's from these guys and their respective productions, or any indie film that's doing a little kind of meet and greet and a premiere, check it out. Definitely check it out. Plunk down that cash and go.
We need the support. We need the greatest community.
Absolutely.
All right. With that, then, gentlemen, thanks so much for stopping by. And with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Mark and Thomas, talking about their new project, Body of Walter, as well as many of their other projects in the past. And actually, Mark mentioned that he's got one coming up real soon on the horizon. So, you know what? Follow those guys on social media and check out what they're doing, because, again, they're doing some fantastic independent cinema here in Columbus, Ohio. And now I think it's about time for me to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode, or any episode for that matter. Well, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. But you can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads under @PVDcast. And if you want to, you want to be a little bit long-winded and old school, you can shoot me an email if you want. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Hey, help out the PVDcast and let people know where they can hear it. Tell them that they can go over to PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, where every single episode debuts. But you're going to also find it a variety of different places, such as any of those major podcasting applications or outlets. All you have to do is go over to your favorite outlet, put PVDcast in the search bar. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And if you are listening through one of those podcasting apps or outlets, let them know what you think about the PVDcast. Please rate and review. It is super important. It drives me up the charts, and that is important for me and those podcasting outlets. They want to know who's listening, when you're listening, how long you're listening. They need all that data. And again, in the end, it benefits me. So please rate and review. And while you're at it, you might as well subscribe so that you never miss an episode of this beloved podcast. But wait, there's one other way you can hear the week's episode. And that is every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, through the Facebook page, I do a little live broadcast. So there you go. Three easy ways to catch the PVD cast. All right, well, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you one more time for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2024.